It's Friday, January 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Coming up, Islamic State militants claim a deadly blast in Jakarta. The International Atomic Energy Agency prepares to report on Iran's nuclear program.
The only way that he can prevent it from happening again is to extradite Chapo to the United States.
Where should a dangerous double escapee be imprisoned? Also ahead, a huge lottery payout, and we reveal this year's Oscar nominees. It's all on today's International Edition. The Islamic State group has claimed responsibility for a coordinated bomb and gun attack Thursday in the Indonesian capital that left seven people dead, including all five attackers. Correspondent Steve Herman has arrived in Jakarta, and he spoke just a short time ago with VOA Susan Yaki.
We have the head of the Jakarta Provincial Police, who is the former head of the elite counterterrorism unit here in Indonesia, saying that this was indeed the work of a group under Islamic State, a military wing headed by an Indonesian who's believed to be in Raqqa, Syria, and that they will find those who masterminded this attack.
This included guns and explosions.
Yes, this occurred at 10:40 in the morning. People reported hearing up to six explosions as well as gunfire. And it was obviously a coordinated attack. Some security experts who have analyzed the video have said that it appears that part of the attack was thwarted or did not occur as the attackers intended. And the authorities here are saying this attack was meant to imitate the Paris attacks.
This attack was in a sort of a central area of town.
Absolutely. The core of it was at a Starbucks, a U.S. Coffee chain. This was very close to the offices of the United Nations here, as well as a number of embassies, and that explains why foreigners are among the casualties.
And I guess the investigation will continue, even though they already have one person in mind.
Absolutely, but this does appear to be intended to have been carried out at a strategic point where they would be able to target foreigners. We're told that this Starbucks coffee shop that was attacked is frequented by diplomats, and Starbucks has announced that they are shutting all of the outlets in Jakarta temporarily.
The government has warned about these attacks in Indonesia.
Yes, there was an alert that went out last month expecting something to happen late December or around New Year's, and that they had intelligence that something was being planned, and they had mobilized quite a security squad to go to public places as well as churches and other venues that they thought might be targets of the attack. But this has caught everyone really by surprise here. It's the biggest such attack in more than 6 years, when we had the bombings of two five-star hotels in Jakarta.
And there was also that Bali attack many years ago.
Yes, and there was also another attack on a hotel in 2003.
VOA correspondent Steve Herman in Jakarta. Time now to check out what's buzzing online. International Edition's social media correspondent G. Abby Lee is here in Studio 22 to tell us about a conversation between President Obama and Twitter users. Wow. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim. Yeah, it's not every day you get to speak directly with a president of the United States, but it was possible Thursday thanks to Twitter. President Obama was on Twitter around 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to answer questions addressed to him with hashtag AskPOTUS. The first question he answered is this: what are we going to do about making colleges more affordable? His answer reads like this: expanded Pell Grants, capped loan repayment at 10% income. But now we want to also make two-year community college free. A Pell Grant is government-funded money for students who need it to pay for tuition. And the awesome thing about grants is that, unlike loans, they don't have to be paid back.
I see. So tell us a couple more of these conversations.
Sure. He answered questions about Islamophobia, healthcare, and of course, gun control. And one of the questions reads like this. Federal funding was all but denied by Bobby Jindal for Medicaid and more. How can we fix that going forward? Mr. Obama answered, new Louisiana Governor Bel Edwards just expanded Medicaid, gets 1,000 coverage, and helps the state budget. More states need to follow. In a separate tweet, he also answered, the greatest memory while being president was when the Affordable Care Act passed. But Jim, it wasn't all serious policy talks. He even got asked about professional basketball players. And one Twitter user asked whether he likes Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, or LeBron James. And the president answered, love them all.
A very diplomatic answer. The president, of course, a huge basketball fan.
Yeah.
What are some of the responses to the Twitter talk?
Well, the GOP presidential hopeful Paul Ryan was quick to share his thoughts. He tweeted, hashtag ask POTUS ended without mentioning the economy, poverty, veterans, ISIS, or Iran. Hashtag priorities. Jim?
Well, thanks so much for that wrap-up. Very interesting, G. And unlike hashtag ask POTUS, our Twitter account is at @VOA_IE and doesn't have any time limits on receiving feedbacks. You can contact us at any time. And you can also follow G and myself, first at G Abby Lee and then at VOA Stevenson. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This is VOA's International Edition. Iran's deputy foreign minister says his government expects the International Atomic Energy Agency to issue a final report as early as Friday, today, confirming that Tehran has met all of its obligations under last year's international nuclear agreement. That could lead to a lifting of crippling international sanctions. The IAEA has not yet commented on the report's status, and despite a threat of presidential veto, a skeptical U.S. House of Representatives on Wednesday approved a measure to maintain some sanctions on Iranian individuals and financial institutions over concerns about Iran's ballistic missile program and terrorist activities. Regional analyst Jonathan Adelman, a foreign affairs professor at the University of Denver, told VOA's Victor Beatty Iran's recent behavior is not helping matters.
First and foremost is the fact that not under this agreement, but under United Nations resolutions that were passed a few years ago, Iran was not to launch missiles that would be capable of carrying nuclear warheads. And a few weeks ago, we saw them launch two missiles that were capable of carrying nuclear warheads. We saw the USS Harry Truman, which is an aircraft carrier down in the Gulf, that the Iranians launched a missile that came within 1 mile of hitting our aircraft carrier. Then, of course, we saw the most recent incident in which two small boats, with just a few Americans on it, by accident drifted into their waters. And now there's a big dispute, which we can't resolve right now. But the question is, were they forced to kneel? Did the administration issue an apology? And on the media, we're hearing different versions of this. But nevertheless, all this fits into one solid aspect, which is the Iranians are still saying death to America, and the administration logically wanted them to move on down the road, just like the Chinese did after President Nixon's visit in 1972 and the detente with the Soviet Union. And right now, there's no indication that that's what's going to happen.
There are contradictory reports in state media about the fate of that Arak heavy reactor, and it's not clear if Iran has removed the core of that reactor as promised and filled it with cement. agreement.
That's another problem here, which is that historically, the United Nations or the major powers should be able to have complete access to nuclear plants. And the concern is that the Iranians are doing much of the examination themselves, which is, to put it politely, at least very unorthodox in international politics. So there's a whole series of these things. And the point is, we really don't know at this point what this means outside of the upcoming elections in Iran. But there are many people who are certainly concerned about this because this is not the kind of reaction we thought they would get when they're going to get $100 billion or more in sanctions lifted and when they are threatening the United States of America that spearheaded the effort to allow them to move back into the international arena.
Also continuing to overshadow relations is the fact that four Americans of Iranian origin remain in detention in Iran. The Mexico Attorney General's office says the extradition process is underway to send Sinaloa drug cartel kingpin Joaquin El Chapo Guzman to the United States following his recapture last Friday. Guzman's attorney, however, has vowed a tough legal fight to keep his client, who has escaped the grasp of Mexican authorities twice in the past, in Mexico. Guzman is back in the same prison that he escaped from in July. Mexican authorities want to question actor Sean Penn, who had met with the drug lord back in October in an undisclosed jungle meeting in Mexico. That meeting, purportedly to discuss a biographical film about Guzman, was reportedly arranged by Mexican actress Kate de Castillo. Mexican government sources suggest the meeting led to Guzman's arrest. Michael Braun, a former chief of operations at the DEA, told CNN it would be wise for Mexican authorities to send El Chapo to the United States to avoid another embarrassing escape attempt. And Braun tells VOA's Francis Alonso on why the Mexican government should probably agree to send him to the United States.
I don't believe President Peña Nieto can afford another very embarrassing situation, another very embarrassing prison escape. When that happened last July, when Chapo escaped from Altiplano prison, Mexico's tier one supermax prison, if you will, when Chapo escaped, the president of Mexico's popularity plummeted, and it's been in the toilet ever since. I simply don't believe he can chance that happening again. The only way that he can prevent it from happening again is to extradite Chapo to the United States.
What crimes has Joaquin Guzman committed in the United States that the U.S. would want him here?
He's charged with conspiracy. He's charged with some other extraterritorial statutes, as I understand it. And it's important, Francis, to understand that I believe 9 different judicial districts in the United States, federal judicial districts, are holding indictments on Guzman. In the Eastern District of New York, he's also charged with federal capital offenses related to homicides that were very much part of his enterprise. He operates a global drug trafficking cartel that's responsible for at least half of the heroin that is plaguing our country today, as well as cocaine, methamphetamine, and marijuana.
Tell us your thoughts on Joaquin Guzman's interview with Sean Penn, and that he boasted having this huge arsenal and weaponry and boats and what have you at his disposal. What are your thoughts on that interview?
There's growing information and evidence that clearly shows that Guzman's trail had all but gone cold in October of last year when Mr. Penn decided to make his epic visit, and Mexico's intelligence and law enforcement assets and resources were able to pick up the trail, which ultimately led to Chapo's apprehension. So I'm
sure. But, you know, you've got to admit, though, it's a little embarrassing for, you know, law enforcement agencies, both in the United States and in Mexico, that, you know, an actor, Penn, would be able to use as contacts and reach this man seemingly out of nowhere and even get an interview with him. I mean, well, honestly, that's a journalistic coup in itself.
Well, you know, honestly, this meeting with Sean Penn, it's interesting because what Sean Penn basically accomplished was he interjected himself right in the middle of the most complex transnational organized crime conspiracy investigation our country's ever been involved in. That's an aspect that no one's really talking about, and what happens there, I'm not exactly sure. But understand that the government of Mexico, supported by the United States, has known on many occasions over the past 6 or 8 months since his escape, for all intents and purposes, where he was at, but because he was surrounded at times with as many as 300 armed, heavily armed guards, the government of Mexico chose not to attempt to intervene or to apprehend him because there could have been a major bloodbath on the streets of communities that where they knew he was located.
Michael Braun, a former chief of operations at the DEA. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
All right, you knew it had to happen at some point. After weeks and weeks of anticipation, three lucky winners hit the record-shattering $1.6 billion, that's billion with a B, dollar Powerball jackpot. We still don't know their identities. I can tell you it's not me because I'm here in the studio. But, you know, some things are more important than money. The three tickets were sold in Tennessee, Florida, and as VOA's Alberto Pimenta tells us, a Los Angeles suburb that burst out in celebrations.
Chino Hills, California cannot contain its excitement. Hundreds celebrated in this local 7-Eleven convenience store where one of the winning Powerball tickets was sold.
It's almost like we won even though we didn't because our community won.
This 7-Eleven owner who sold the winning ticket also won big. Powerball will give him $1 million for selling the ticket.
I'm very happy, I'm very excited, I'm very proud.
There are two other winning tickets. One sold at this Melbourne Beach, Florida grocery store.
We were informed this morning about 5:30 that this location did sell one of the winning tickets.
And another in Munford, Tennessee.
Hopefully, they're out there getting the best legal and financial advice they can find before they come in and claim that wonderful prize.
Advice that comes in handy. 70% of lottery winners don't have a dime within a few years. But not this single mother.
I live on a budget. And I'm disciplined.
She has saved most of the $224 million she won. This ends weeks of national frenzy for a $1.6 billion prize so big it did not even fit on billboards. Alberto Pimienta for VOA News, Washington.
Well, perhaps hoping to win another prestigious lottery of sorts. The survival epic, The Revenant, and the science fiction tale, The Martian. Those are among the top contenders for this year's Academy Awards, better known as the Oscars. Those were announced early Thursday in Beverly Hills, California. VOA's Mike O'Sullivan has more on the nominees.
The Revenant and The Martian are among the eight nominees for Best Motion Picture, which also include Mad Max Fury Road, the latest installment of the Australian post-apocalyptic drama, and Bridge of Spies, based on a true tale of Cold War espionage. Contenders for Best Actor include Leonardo DiCaprio for The Revenant and Matt Damon for The Martian, in which he plays an astronaut fighting for survival on Mars.
I gotta figure out a way to grow
3 years' worth of food here.
Bryan Cranston is a Best Actor nominee for the Hollywood drama Trumbo and Eddie Redmayne for his role as a transgender woman in The Danish Girl. Michael Fassbender is a Best Actor nominee for his role as technology pioneer Steve Jobs in the film Steve Jobs. Best Actress nominees include Cate Blanchett for Carol, a story of a romance between two women, and Jennifer Lawrence for Joy, the true tale of a woman who created a business empire. Brie Larson is a nominee for her role as a mother held captive with her child in the film Room. Oscar contenders for their supporting performances include Mark Ruffalo and Rachel McAdams for Spotlight, based on the true story of the Boston journalists who uncovered the child abuse scandal in the Catholic Church.
They knew, and they let it happen! Two kids!
Rooney Mara earned a supporting nod for Carol, Tom Hardy for The Revenant, Christian Bale for The Big Short, and Sylvester Stallone for his role as a coach in the boxing drama Creed. Nominees for Best Director include George Miller for Mad Max, Alejandra Iñárritu for The Revenant, and Tom McCarthy for Spotlight. The Oscars will be presented February 28th at the Dolby Theater in Hollywood. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Oscar night, always one of our favorite times of the year to look forward to. You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at our website, voanews.com. We're on Twitter at @VOA_IE. Our winning directors, Tracy Carter, another prize winner, engineer Zineb Abdel-Rahman. We thank you for being with us. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Have yourself a great day. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Since October, five people connected to a publishing house in Hong Kong have mysteriously disappeared. The publishing house, Mighty Current, has published books critical of Chinese Communist Party officials, including Chinese President Xi Jinping. Gui Minhai, the owner of Mighty Current, vanished October 17th from a seaside apartment in Thailand. Later that month, two staff members of Causeway Bay Bookstore, which is partially owned by Mighty Current, went missing during a trip to mainland China. A fourth man connected to the publishing house also disappeared in October, most likely in Hong Kong or Xinjiang. On January 1st, reports surfaced that Li Bo, a business partner of Gui Minhai, had gone to visit a warehouse in Hong Kong used by the publishing company and did not return home. Hong Kong media have reported that security camera footage showed a mysterious man wearing a cap following Li Bo, both when he entered and exited the elevator of the warehouse. An eyewitness reportedly saw several people push Li into a van after he exited the building. Thousands of residents of Hong Kong took to the streets to protest the disappearances. Among other slogans, protesters reportedly shouted, "No to cross-border abductions," and "Stop political kidnapping." Hong Kong's chief executive, Leon Chun-ying, expressed concern over Hong Kong's residents' rights and safety and said it would be unacceptable if mainland Chinese authorities were seeking to enforce laws in Hong Kong. That, he said, would be a breach of the Basic Law, a document that enshrines the principle of one country, two systems, and guarantees Hong Kong a high degree of autonomy and its own legal system. The Basic Law also guarantees freedom of speech in Hong Kong. At a press briefing, U.S. State Department spokesperson John Kirby said the United States is disturbed by reports of the disappearances of five people associated with the Mighty Current Publishing House. "We share the concern of the people of Hong Kong regarding these disappearances," said Mr. Kirby. "We noted the January 4th statement by Hong Kong's chief executive expressing concerns about the potential implications of this case, and we share those concerns."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.